Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter, Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. This week at the Florida Phoenix Online, Florida Phoenix is a great publication if you're interested in really anything going on in Florida, environmental stuff, particularly for me, but they cover the legislature and business deals and development. It's a great online resource for anyone interested in Florida news, floridaphoenix.com. Craig's Thursday column every Thursday focuses on environmental issues. And this week, getting back into the Springs and the Florida Department of so-called Environmental Protection.
Well, I wrote about this back in last year because the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, under this new law that was passed in 2016, they were supposed to come up with a new definition of what constitutes harm to the springs. And the idea was that this would be the language that would be used in issuing water use permits, because we're pulling so much water out of the aquifer for watering golf courses and other stuff like that, that it's harming the springs. And instead of producing this by 2017, which they were supposed to, the DEP kept putting it off and kept putting it off, sort of like and I compared it to a college student hitting the snooze alarm on his alarm clock, you know, over and over and over again. They'd say, oh, well, we need more time. And finally, last week, they put out this new language, and it turned out to be exactly the same language that had been used since 2014 that was harming the springs. And it sort of,
which they were ordered to change.
Yes, that was the whole reason for changing the language. And they offered the exact same language that was already there. It's mind-boggling, and it's not recycling, it's just being lazy, basically.
Yeah. Well, I thought you interviewed one of the Springs Council members about this drawdown of the springs, and he said something like 30% of the water pressure is gone, and he related that to, imagine if your blood pressure went down 30%. You know, at some point, I mean, like all of these environmental issues, sort of like the wet paper bag, I mean, you can go so far until you can't go so far and the whole thing collapses and you've got ruined groceries all over the kitchen floor.
Well, and that's the thing is people, you know, you can't see what's coming out of the springs until it comes out. But they don't really think about, this is all coming from the aquifer that we are drawing our drinking water from. If we have drawn down the springs that much, that tells you our aquifer may be in trouble too. And I did a series of stories on the springs several years ago that found that they are starting to see salt creeping up into the aquifer because we pulled so much water out of it that the brackish part of the aquifer is kind of starting to come up and intrude on the freshwater part that we drink from. So if we don't start backing off of that, we're going to ruin our aquifer for good.
Yeah, we've done a number of episodes on the springs. Florida remarkably has more freshwater springs than any other place on earth. And you would think if there were drinking water is so obviously essential to human life, you'd think if there were one thing that we can all agree, hey, we need to protect this and really be serious about it and not like, you know, fool around big ag industry. Hey, develop, it's our water. Not really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jeb Bush, when he was in office, he got convinced by a DEP employee named Jim Stevenson, hey, the springs are in trouble. We need to do something about it. And so Jeb Bush actually set up a Florida Springs Initiative. They had special springs councils for all of the major springs. They were making recommendations. They had set aside money for it. And then Rick Scott came along and dismantled all of it. And it's, you know, we're paying the price now.
Sadly, that price has probably just begun to be paid. And there is more inflation coming on it. Yeah. This week's episode of Welcome to Florida, presented, as always, by Visit Sarasota. And Craig, you were running around in Sarasota recently. You're down all the time there with the in-laws, but you stopped into one of the great independent community bookstores down there, Bookstore One Sarasota, to sign some books.
Yeah, Bookstore One is this fabulous independent bookstore. I love the independent bookstores in Florida, and they are really a classy operation. They had been in another location that was, I think, sort of cramping their style, so they moved into a larger location downtown. It's on Pineapple Avenue, and I stopped in because I hadn't been there, and I really loved the setting. I like the lightness and airiness of it because they have some big windows out front. And I said, hey, do you need me to sign anything? And they said, yeah, come on, sign these. And also Somebody just bought a copy of The Sin of Scandal. So
nice. That's got to be like Mick Jagger stopping at Power Records to sign copies of a Rolling Stones album. Oh my goodness!
And it was funny. One
alert
of the
media.
One of the clerks choked. You know, we usually require the authors to sign in blood, and I said, "Oh well, you better get me some then."
Bookstore One, Sarasota. Like Craig said, it's on 117 South Pineapple Avenue in the Mark Building, right in the heart of downtown Sarasota's shopping and dining district. A great independent community bookstore. If you are in Sarasota, when you are in Sarasota, stop by Bookstore One. Check them out online, sarasotabooks.com. Begin planning your next visit to Sarasota at visitsarasota.com. And that takes us to this week's guest, who is a Florida author, just like Craig, Tyler Gillespie. And Craig, you actually reviewed Tyler's 2021 book, The Thing About Florida.
Yeah, he, I've been on his podcast, so it's certainly time to have him on ours. Tyler has written a couple of books. His first book was called Florida Man Poems, which are poems about various Florida man stories. Some of them are very funny, some are very sad. And then he produced this book of essays called The Thing About Florida, where he explores some aspects of the state and talks about cattle ranching and python hunting and alligators and things like that. But he also delivers some very wrenching and personal memories about growing up gay in Florida. And I thought that would be a good topic for us to talk about, considering the Don't Say Gay bill that the legislature has passed and the governor says he's going to sign.
Yeah. Tyler Gillespie teaches writing currently at the University of Mississippi. You can find him online at TylerGillespie.com or on social media at TylerMTG on Twitter. The Thing About Florida, you can find that, of course, at all the online retailers, or stop in at Bookstore One Sarasota or your local independent community bookstore to pick up a copy.
Tyler, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. I want to start off by asking you about your two books, the book of poetry dedicated to Florida men, and then your more recent book, The Thing About Florida. How did you come to write those?
Well, thank you for having me on this program. I'm super excited to be here. So I started writing The Thing About Florida, the kind of more essay style, before I wrote the poems. And I had started writing that when I was an MFA grad student at the University of New Orleans. And kind of one of those things where people would consistently ask me, what's up with Florida? You know, and when you're in New Orleans and people are asking you what's up with a place, it makes you kind of wonder, you know, what is up with that place, right? I love New Orleans. It's a fantastic city, but it has its own oddities as well, you know, which makes it lovable to me in certain ways. And so I started doing some research, and then I asked one of my best friends, like, hey, do you think we know anyone who is a Florida man story? And she's like, oh, I know two people, I think. One of them moved away to Connecticut, I think, and the other was still in Pinellas County, which is where I'm from. And so that's kind of what started that. Then I was just, you know, writing some pieces for different publications and kind of built from there. And then I put the project to the side when I moved back home to Florida after grad school. And then I put the project to the side after the Pulse shooting, because I had gone to UCF and I knew some folks who were there that night. And I just kind of couldn't really write, you know, with the essays, I was trying to answer questions like, what's up? But that just kind of really, you know, I didn't have any answers. And I also got depressed, which is not good for the writing process.
Understandable.
So then I started to kind of switch to poems, where I was kind of asking more questions. It was a more generative space for me to ask questions and not have any answers. And so that was the poems. And, you know, I had some poems in there about, you know, the Florida Man headline. Just kind of, I documented a whole year of Florida Man headlines from the Twitter. And then I looked up who, you know, was behind those, who the actual people were, because it's kind of one of those things, as you know, it's really depersonalized and dehumanizing for a lot of people. It's like they're just a headline, not an actual human being. So I was always interested in who are these humans, what are their stories. And then so after I kind of wrote the poems, there's a lot about alligators in there and a lot about, you know, drag queens.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
For the past 2 years, I've been writing a lot about alligators and drag queens.
As you do. So,
right. I mean, yeah, two of my favorite things to write about. Mm-hmm. And so then after I wrote the poems, I was able to kind of like, I had done more research and I had more kind of, not that I have answers, of course, but I was able to make more solid arguments in the essays.
And the thing about Florida, you include a lot more personal observations and personal memories of what it's like for you, or what it has been like for you growing up in Florida. Tell us a little bit about those experiences.
That was probably late stage in the drafts, right? The earlier stages, there wasn't as much personal connection in there, just because I was more interested in kind of writing about it from more journalistic, like research kind of base. And then I would have moments of connection of the first person to like connect some of these stories or like these ideas. And then, you know, my agent and some readers and editor was like, you know, we need more first person, because that's when the humor was coming in. I'm kind of more self-deprecating. And so that was many drafts later. Now we're getting stories about, you know, me, and probably a story that, you know, one of the essays will talk about most likely, the last one in the book, which is about growing up, you know, as a gay person in the Southern Baptist Church. That actually was added, like, not last minute, but in the final kind of moments, because I had been working towards that and essay for a long time and couldn't quite figure it out. So adding the personal kind of, you know, added that. And so I'm grateful for that. But, you know, Florida, growing up in Florida, I love it. I love Florida so much. You know what I mean? I like the hot weather. I burn easily, so I don't necessarily love the sun. I mean, I love it, but I have to wear, you know, SPF like 190.
Right.
You do love Florida, but in one of the reviews for The Thing About Florida, it talks about how you left the state and at one point were embarrassed to call it home. What embarrassed you about the state?
At different points in my life, I've been embarrassed about a lot of different things, you know, and at this point I'm like, whatever, here we are. But mm-hmm. I think what I was kind of embarrassed about was just kind of the reputation. Like when you're in a space, like when I was at UCF as an undergrad, people will be like, Florida's so weird and Florida's so this and that. And then I started to kind of internalize that and kind of think like, maybe Florida isn't as cool as, you know, I thought, you know, as or whatever. And how does that speak to me and about my own identity? And I think that a lot of people become embarrassed from where they're from. An interviewer was saying like her kids live in New York City and they're embarrassed to be from New York City or whatever, you know. So I think it's all kind of a process of like, you know, figuring out what's great about our home states. I think I was just mostly embarrassed about the kind of wild news stories that were coming out of the state.
Would you be embarrassed today to talk about Florida with the Don't Say Gay bill?
Well, I mean, some things are embarrassing, I think, right? Like, that's pretty embarrassing for different reasons. But no, I'm not embarrassed to talk about anything. Florida's, of course, I mean, as you know, of course, is a complicated state. So
putting it mildly, yeah.
right. Mm-hmm. I'm not embarrassed to talk about it at all.
Since you mentioned it, Craig, and obviously, Tyler, you have talked about and written about growing up gay in Florida. What do you make of the so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which the governor will almost surely sign into law?
He said he will, yeah.
I have a kind of a long answer to this. I'm going to try to get my thoughts and wrap it around, but, you know, I always kind of start. So I grew up as a Southern Baptist in Florida, meaning I went to a Southern Baptist school from K through 12. So we were not saying gay a lot of the times there, you know, and when they were saying it, it was not a nice thing, right?
Right.
So I think that, and that's what I kind of think that I've really learned from writing the book. I have a chapter that talks about Equality Florida and Nadine Smith, who, you know, is a huge icon in the state. And one of the Equality Florida folks were telling me, like, you know, because there's this debate about, like, well, is Florida Southern? You know, that goes back, whatever. But, like, politically, it is a Southern state. It's a conservative state, some people would argue, right? And so it, some people that I talk to think it's even getting more conservative than it was maybe, 20 years ago when they moved here. So I think that, and of course, when I read the bill, I think about it in two ways, right? As a gay person, as a queer man, but also as an educator, right? I teach writing and I teach in different spaces. And so I think that for me, we should be able to talk about a safe space to talk about all of these different kinds of things in the classroom for students that need to talk about it, that may be coming from difficult home situations, right? Like a lot of the teachers are kind of beacons of hope and like safety for people. And I've kind of, I don't teach young, I teach at a university, but, even at the university level, a lot of folks will read my writing or just kind of know kind of about my, life and my writing and stuff. And they'll want to come talk to me because they come from places that weren't super accepting, and that can be really difficult. And when I read the bill, from my interpretation, they want parents to be active in their children's education and things like that. And I think that's great. And I think that they should be talking about these things at home, but I don't think enough people are talking about it probably in a really educated place, in a place from love. It's usually from a place of fear. And so I would think that to completely ban any kind of discussion, I think I read some different drafts and there is maybe like language about instruction on these things or, discussion. So I don't really know. I think that's one of the things people are critiquing, is that it is pretty vague and there's a lot going on in there. And I mean, that section too, or that little moment seems super random. It's, and now we can't talk about gender and, sexual orientation from grades kindergarten to third, or what's age appropriate. I think it's problematic. And, people have been saying, I think someone recently was like, this is an anti-grooming bill, whatever that means. A lot of times gay folks are associated still with being pedophiles or whatever. I'm like, yeah, this is 2022, y'all. Come on.
Yeah, that's been the response from legislators and from the governor's press secretary, is to accuse critics of the bill of being pro-pedophile, basically, which is, that's a technique that goes all the way back to the Johns Committee here in Florida.
And back further. I mean, it's the oldest trick in the book, to play on people's bigotry and fear and associate homosexualities with pedophilia. And also this idea that the homosexuals are out there trying to recruit your children.
Yeah.
This idea that because homosexuals can't reproduce, that they need to recruit new members, so to speak, which is just the most debased logic, purely formed out of hatred and diseased minds. But it is prevalent and has been prevalent for 100 years. And sadly, looking at this now and knowing it's 2020, there's no reason to believe it won't be prevalent for the next 100 years.
Yeah,
it's just like fixed in this super Christian, biblical, fundamentalist, conservative, right-wing, wacko mentality that wants us to think, pizza chains are fronts for pedophilia rings.
Right. And I can definitely say nobody recruited me to be gay. Like, I was trying.
I was going to ask you, was there a quota system for the recruiter? Or
No, I tried everything. The church, I really didn't want to be gay. I was trying to pray it away. I was definitely trying to, get as far away from it as possible. I thought, this is how warped my idea was. I really thought at one point in my life, if I sat in the same place where a gay person was, I was going to be gay.
But when you don't have information, when you don't have anyone sharing this, and there's no, it's better now than even when you grow up, and you're a young person, you don't appear to be even much more than 30, but imagine, going way back, there's no manual for this. Right.
Exactly.
And that's one of the problems when kids are, gay or otherwise, are limited from seeking out their teachers for counsel. And fortunately for me, and I speak from a place of tremendous privilege, I didn't need my teachers for that. I had a stable home life. I had parents who loved me, and I didn't need my teachers to be like de facto parents counselors, therapists, but a lot of people do need that. And this bill, probably more than anything else, creates a chilling effect on children and teachers to hide these conversations.
Yeah. Or if a kid asks them about it, they can't talk about it. What was it like? Tell us just generally what it was like for you growing up in Florida, growing up gay. How were you able to seek out other gay people?
Well,
talk to them.
Well, okay. So I went to bars, whatever. I'll get to that in a second, but I do kind of want to touch on what you were saying too, sure. Just because it's interesting to think about there. We're not allowed to discuss these things. And I wonder how that will look, because I was a summer camp counselor for like the 3 to 5 year olds, and just like kind of taking a step back from that, like, you know, they ask questions, but we're not trying to get your kids, recruit them. We're trying to get them to sit down, to listen, to not get hit by cars when we're trying to walk them across, you know, when they're very young to the park. But, you know, I think it's also complicated because we're going to lose really good teachers at a time where it's hard. I mean, as an educator, keeping teachers right now that are qualified and that want to be there is difficult already. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in the classroom at that age now, because I'd be so anxious about what I can say or not, or if I'm going to get sued. So I just wonder what that will look like, because kids are curious. And so, you know, what are you going to say if someone asks something about, they saw something on TV or overheard something? Are you going to be like, oh, no, we can't talk about that?
Right. The surest way to get a kid to do something is telling him not to, right? So, right. I mean, this almost invites that.
Right. And I also, it just, like, not to spin out of control about curriculum, but it's something that it's like already teachers that I know who teach in Florida in high schools, the curriculum is already so determined by these powers. They're not determined by educators and things like that. So I think like the parents who are really wanting to be involved in their kids' education need to understand that it's not just about saying gay or whatever. It's about like who is determining what is able to be talked about or taught in the classroom, and who are the people and what are their reasons for doing it. You know, I know a biology teacher in Orange County who can't even talk about sex education with high schoolers, but she's a biologist. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so I think that's something that people need to understand, is like these governing bodies have a lot of say over what's being taught. And I think they're trying to shift it into some weird territory that plays on people's emotions.
One of the sponsors, one of the Senate sponsors of the bill, had previously tried to get a bill passed that would force teachers in Florida to provide alternative instruction about things other than evolution, that you know, they should talk about that. And he was also supporting keeping Confederate monuments in place too.
Right.
So that's what we're dealing with here.
And I didn't, you know, and this kind of touches back to how did I find other, you know,
yes, people? I'm sorry.
Well,
yes.
And I'm just going to loop it in, because I went to a Christian school. We weren't taught about evolution or anything. We were taught about, you know, new creationism, and that, I distinctly remember them saying, like, if evolution was real, there would be more dust on the moon. I don't know how they're making that, whatever the beliefs
Or why are there still monkeys? That was another popular one.
And, you know, as I write in the book, I have I identify as a Christian, and I'm not trying to, you know, criticize people who do believe that, but I'm saying, like, in terms of education, then I get to college and I'm like, there's a whole swath of things that I just I'm not able to talk about. You know, I wasn't able to really associate with other gay people, and, you know, I'd have to keep my distance, especially in high school, because I was gonna get expelled for being gay. And it's interesting too, because I remember, you know, if you're gay, whatever, you get expelled. But it's also, I remember, well, this is kind of a story where, like, a guy, you know, had, like, I guess they got to third base, maybe you would call it, right? And then the administration found out, and the teenage girl was expelled and got in more trouble than the guy, right? So this is kind of the, like, gendered aspect of it, too. So I remember... I had heard about some bars in Tampa, and I found a fake ID of a white guy who kind of had a buzz cut like I did in high school, you know, and so I could kind of use it. And so whenever I got a car, I just drove over to the bars in Tampa. You know, we had a bunch of bars over there, you know, kind of more divey bars and things like that. And so I met a bunch of folks over there, and that's that, you know, kind of secretive like ways of doing it. But in Tampa, and like I kind of joke about, was like a bridge separated me from school, from God, you know, anything in Tampa I could do. Nobody knew me in Tampa. You know what I mean? And I distinctly remember too, I saw a member of the church, let's just say that, I don't want to out him, even though whatever, this is years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing a member of the church there, and I got excited because I was like, oh, another person that I can talk to about this and like, you know, navigate this with maybe. And he was like, oh, I'm here on a dare, or someone like tricked me to be here, you know? And I was like, bro, we're both here. Like, come on, you know, like, yeah. I'm not gonna out you. And then, you know, I eventually did get outed, but that's fine. You know, not fine, but that was kind of my own journey. I got outed right after high school. But yeah, so in the bars, you know, I met a lot of people, and because I would get there early because I wanted to get in for free. And, you know, the older guys were there, so we would talk. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from them. I'm still learning a lot from them. Well, I learned there's a history of like, you, our history. There's a history of gay people, right, you know, that are doing things that are actually pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And activism and educators and just at all levels, artists. And, you know, I didn't have access to that at the time. You know, the internet was, you know, what is it called? Dial up at the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it was there.
Yeah, but with that annoying sound. Handshake.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but it's like, I didn't really have access to the same kind of media or books and that maybe here today, right? So I had to learn these things from these people and like about cultural references and like art, you know, pop culture and things like that that are important. Which, you know, talking about banning things, they're also banning a lot of gay books and like just books by marginalized identities as it is. So that's a problem in itself too. But yeah, so I would learn about that. Also the best kind of music to listen to, you know, but also how to survive in a way too, because like you were saying, even when I was, you know, going to this is the early 2000s, like mid 2000s, but the folks I were talking to had it in ways that is really difficult for people to process. Like, you know, they had, you know, lost so many of their friends during the AIDS crisis. They had faced extreme violence. Like you were talking about with the Johns Committee, there was just like these, yeah, like actual legitimate hunts for people to out them and to, you know, you can get arrested and like all of these things, right? So these folks would kind of talk to me about their experiences and, you know, just kind of in passing, you know, they're like, oh, well, if you're going to be gay, you kind of need to know these things. You know what I mean?
If only there was a pamphlet.
Right, exactly.
And you talk in the book too about your friend, the hairdresser, who was going to learn things from drag queens.
Exactly. So, right. And that's a story. I was just reading. I was just asked to give a reading. Like I gave it, I guess last week, you know, time is flying by, in Tampa. And I read about Randy, AKA Portia, because, you know, there's this thing about we're not saying gay or, you know, whatever. And so I'm like, well, I want to read something gay today, you know. But I was reading that story because Randy lived in Pinellas County and would literally be teased by his teachers, would be beat up. The school bus driver, it was so bad, would let him off early so he could have a head start on these kids who were like trying to chase him down.
Oh, man.
And, you know, he's only in his mid-50s. And so then he essentially got into a fight with one of his bullies and got expelled. And so his mom was like, you know, I have something better for you. You're going to beauty school. And that's where he met a drag queen, was in beauty school. And that opened and changed his life for the better. And then that kind of also just ties in, speaking of that chapter and Randy, and he talks about how many people of his friends were dying from AIDS, right? And so that's another thing that I think, you know, people aren't kind of aware of, is that there are a lot of queer people in Florida. There's a whole history and they have different issues with aging and elder care and things like that, because they don't have necessarily, yes, the same support systems of children, or a lot of their friends had passed away because of AIDS. So that's something that's really important to me, an issue that I care a lot about.
You talk about the difficulties of growing up in Florida, gay. You know, growing up for anyone is difficult. Growing up gay, obviously, exponentially more difficult. But do you think, and you know, with your particular experience of growing up in this Christian environment, Christian school, do you think that experience would be any less difficult? You teach at the University of Mississippi. Would that experience have been any less difficult, more difficult in Mississippi where you teach now, or in Wisconsin where I grew up? Or is this just something that you happen to be in Florida, but is a universally difficult experience?
And a lot of people ask me that too, right? About being an out professor at the University of Mississippi. And then they're like, what is that like for you? And like, you know, and I'm like, there's a lot of great queer people here. There's always been, you know, and there, it is difficult, but you know, but there is a vibrant community here that are really trying to do a lot of great things. And that's true of Florida as well. And I think for me, like, just speaking from my experience, you know, in a Southern Baptist church that is very, you know, that changed maybe if I would have been in a different position. And I, you know, I still, you know, appreciate that experience and things, you know, my parents and my grandparents, they were doing what they thought was best. Like, you know, it is what it is. You know, we all kind of go through that, but it is difficult. And that kind of is where I come back to, like, the, you know, just making sure that parents are, and thinking about the don't say gay, like creating a safe space for their children to deal with these things. It's really heavy. It's like, the, you know, it's life or death for a lot of these people. And it's like, you know, just kind of not being so afraid of that, I think is a great way to be a parent. I mean, I'm not a parent, but you know, you would hope that, you know, more folks would support that.
Do you feel comfortable telling us a little bit about what you're working on now?
Yes, thank you so much. It's funny. It was the reason I also was talking about the other day. I was like, I want to read something gay, because someone also recently told me, they're like, oh, you know, you need to write not just about gay people. You're a great writer. You can do it. I'm like, I'm actually not writing that much about gay people. Most of my book is about straight people, which is fine. Like, room for everyone. But the project that I'm working on right now is all about LGBTQ communities in Florida. So I'm looking at different communities in Florida that either were started because or were sustained by writing. So I'm looking at different, like, newsletters, writing groups, and I'm also looking at different kinds of text and thinking of things like drag as a kind of text, leather community as a kind of text. So I'm looking at those different kind of communities, and I have a chapter so far written now on Gulfport in Pinellas County, which is a fascinating kind of story about they were, you know, wanting to start up a lesbian kind of community in Gulfport for a while, which is not far from where I grew up. And so it's like, oh, I grew up over here in this space, but like over here in Gulfport, there's this thriving lesbian community, right? And that's the kind of interesting thing about Florida too, which, and why our stories are so complex, is we have all these different juxtapositions. But yes, I am currently writing about that, and I'm looking for participants as well, right? So these are word of mouth things. Like, people will be like, oh, I know someone who did this, or I know someone who did that, right? Because these stories aren't necessarily as documented as some of the other ones. So if anytime someone asks, I'm like, I'm looking for folks. So if they want to email me, very easy to find on my email. And I would appreciate, you know, any of that.
Can you mention some places in Florida that you found those communities? I'm guessing Key West, Wilton Manors, those would be a couple of places.
So I'm still early in this process, you know, and COVID was kind of also disrupting me being able to travel and, you know, report on these kind of things. And I wanted to have a chapter, which it's interesting, on Gay Days in Orlando as like the different kind of text. It's really interesting how that happened and how that's evolved, and like the way they use message boards and how they circulated different kinds of text. And that's a kind of writing and thinking about that. And now, you know, Disney's in the news connected to Don't Say Gay, right? So I'm thinking about doing that. I definitely want to do something about Key West. I'm also super interested in the Panhandle. Pensacola Pride, you know, all of that, these interesting kind of spaces. So trying to kind of also look just about, you know, different places in the state. And I have a chapter too about the Watermark, which is a big LGBTQ paper here. It's based out of Orlando, but it's in Pinellas County too. They have an office there as well.
I think you touch on, and you talk about this yin and yang of Florida, what makes Florida so fascinating. You have these vibrant, rich, historic gay communities, Pensacola, Key West, and then you have the Johns Committee, right? You've got places like Miami, which are super diverse and multicultural and almost more Latin American and Caribbean than they are of the United States. And then as deep South Bible Belt as you get in the northern part of the state. And those differences, I think, and you talk about the thing about Florida, you know, that's the thing about Florida, is that there is no one thing. It's so incredibly different and so incredibly diverse. And whether you are looking for the forest right-wing maniac wacko who, you know, helped put the last president in office, or activists and the first civil rights martyrs who we've talked about, and you'll find them in Florida. Whatever you're looking for, you will find here to support your worldview. And there are so few places like that, which offer both in somewhat near to equal measure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we had first gay mayor in Key West, in the United States, was in Key West. But we also had Anita Bryan in Miami trying to shut down the human rights legislation that had passed there to give rights to.
Right. You talked about a mayor in Florida who wanted to ban the devil. Right.
Yes.
I mean, so you've got these just massive opposites all existing within the same state. And by the definition of state boundaries, we want to say, OK, everyone in Ohio is this, and they're generally look like this, act like this, talk like this, think like. And in Florida, it's so many languages, so many people, so many immigrants, crackers and Greeks and Haitians and Puerto Rican. And there is no commonality between any of this other than where it says we reside in on our driver's licenses. And that makes it difficult to compartmentalize what this thing Florida is.
That's the thing about Florida.
Yeah.
Beautifully said.
Well, thank you very much. Tyler Gillespie has been our guest. You can find him online, tylergillespie.com. The book that we've spent most of the time talking about was published just about a year ago, The Thing About Florida. You can find Tyler on social media, on Twitter at TylerMTG. Thanks for sharing so much with us today, Tyler, and your insight on this important issue.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Craig, I think of how difficult it was growing up for my own self. White, heterosexual, male, middle class, middle American. I mean, I had it as easy as you could get just about. And then I think, you know, folks like Tyler, who had to grow up in a super religious background, being gay, and, you know, any little, you know, whether it's a racial thing or you know, you grew up poor or any sort of way that you were felt outside the norm, man, that's hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, where I grew up in Pensacola, the guys I went to high school with, gay was a pejorative term. Oh, you're so gay. Oh, you know, poet was a synonym for them. Oh, he's a poet. Like you're too sensitive to be a macho guy. Mm-hmm. But and yet at the same time, Pensacola was a major gay community and offered these big, you know, summertime parties out at the beach that a lot of the straight people had no idea what was going on. So, you know, if you're a homophobe, just beware. There's lots of gay people around you at all times. So
truly there are. We mentioned in this episode, the Johns Committee. For folks who don't know what that is, a little Florida history 101 before we say goodbye.
So Charlie Johns was very briefly governor, probably one of the worst governors we ever had, and then went back to the legislature and was Senate president. And they formed, this is during the McCarthy era, they formed an anti-communism committee dubbed the Johns Committee that was supposed to look into communism in Florida. And first they went after the NAACP, and they wanted the NAACP's membership list so they can compare it with their list of known communists. And the NAACP said, you're not getting that, mm-hmm. and took him to court and won. So they looked for some other target. And so they decided to go after gay people in the colleges. And so yeah. Instead of holding public hearings, they would find people. Some of them were, you know, this is the 50s. So these were guys stopping off in the Alachua County courthouse in the bathroom, looking for a connection, and they'd grab them and take them to a motel room, put a tape recorder on the bed and say, tell us everything about homosexuality, or we'll drag you into public and expose you. And yeah, lots amazing. Of them did. And they turned lots of people out of the universities, and not just teachers, but students. One of the students who wound up being forced out at the University of Florida was Rita Mae Brown, later the author of Ruby Fruit Jungle, a brilliant student, but they made it too hard for her to stay there and she left. It was just a tragedy. And as with many Florida tragedies, it ended in comedy. The Johns Committee put out a report on what they'd found. It had a purple cover, so they called it the Purple Pamphlet. Hence my joke about a pamphlet mm-hmm. earlier. And it had pictures inside that were, you know, for that day were shocking and pornographic. And they offered to sell it for 25 cents to any interested person. Well, it caused a huge uproar. The Dade County state attorney said anybody who buys it, prosecute them for pornography. It made the Johns Committee a total laughing stock, and they kind of closed up shop and went away. And the legislature put the files under lock and key for about 25 years until somebody finally sued under the Sunshine Law and got it all opened back up again. So we could see just the depth of depravity there, because the Johns Committee actually did uncover some illegal activity, but they ignored it. They ignored, you know, cops trying to exploit prison inmates and so forth to try and mm-hmm. use them for sex, and instead focused on, yeah, but don't tell me about that. Tell me about gay teachers, because it was just that crazy. It was just that crazy. And that's, you know, that's part of Florida history.
Our friend Nick D'Alessandro, who hosts the also Florida focused Wait 5 Minutes podcast, did a recent episode about the Don't Say Gay bill that gets much more into the Johns Committee, the background, the nastiness of it. I'm sure it's a subject we'll pick up in greater detail in a future episode.
And the irony is, you know, like we said, you know, we've got the Johns Committee, we've got Anita Bryant and leading this anti-gay charge in Miami. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we've got very vibrant, strong gay communities that are forming in spite of all the persecution. And mm-hmm. so my prediction is that the Don't Say Gay bill will actually wind up forcing more gay activism in Florida and a lot more people to be out and talking about their own experiences like Tyler did with us today.
Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.